The Tibetan national anthem closes with the line, "May the brilliance of a myriad radiant prosperities be ever triumphant." But triumph for the autonomous region's nationalists looks far off. Once a hot topic on campuses, Tibetan independence has fewer outspoken supporters today, 59 years since the 1959 uprising against Chinese rule. This week, the Voice podcast asks, what possibilities do activists and supporters see for the future of the movement? And does their cause still resonate with young people?
We all continuously protested peacefully against the Chinese government in hope to walk back happily to our own soil, and most importantly, for His Holiness Dalai Lama to return to the land of snow. It's our duty to stand up.
The voice you're hearing is Lobsang Dadon from Students for a Free Tibet. She's part of the Tibetan youth community here in British Columbia, and she spoke last Saturday at an annual protest rally. Every March, Tibetan independence supporters around the world and here in Vancouver commemorate a 1959 uprising against Chinese political control of the plateau, which they believe was imposed by force. The uprising was suppressed, and as you heard Dadon say, the Dalai Lama has not seen the land of snows since that year when he and 80,000 other Tibetans fled for India, Bhutan, and Nepal. Now, almost six decades later, China's economic power shows no signs of slowing, and global leadership shows no signs of allowing the Tibet issue to interfere with Chinese trade deals. Something Tibetan activists have been most vocal about over the years is the loss of their culture and language under Chinese governance. And over the past decade, they say they've actually been fighting a new form of culture war on North American soil. You're going to hear Ladon Tetong, a prominent Tibetan independence activist, explaining this issue more to the crowd gathered last Saturday at the Vancouver Art Gallery.
To challenging China's Confucius Institutes. I live in Boston, and there are two Confucius Institutes at the UMass Boston and Tufts University. These are a culture and education program, supposedly, language and culture program, that the Chinese government runs. Not a Chinese nonprofit, it's the Chinese government, and the highest levels of the Chinese government have started these Confucius Institutes, and they're going around the world and they're trying to get accepted into our universities and our school campuses, even elementary and high school. And they're here in Coquitlam School District and in BCIT. UBC rejected it outright. UBC saw that the China's Confucius Institute program was really just a front for the Chinese government to try to come in, teach the new young generation of global youth, and slowly and easily and quietly silence Tibetans, Taiwanese, Chinese democracy activists, Uyghur people. That is the goal. The goal is to have China's soft power rise and to slowly and quietly kill our issue and the important human rights and political issues that China is facing through the Confucius Institutes. So for example, in North Carolina, at the North Carolina State University in 2009, the Confucius Institute on campus helped to get His Holiness disinvited from the campus. His Holiness was invited to speak. The Confucius Institute helped to get that talk shut down. Tibetans did not escape from Tibet, live as political refugees in India, to come to America, Canada, and have our kids in schools where the Chinese government is teaching. China controls the curriculum, the funding, the textbooks, they even send the teachers. No other foreign government has such an arrangement in the school system anywhere in North America, certainly. We wouldn't let Vladimir Putin and the Kremlin send teachers, textbooks, and funding for Russian language and culture programs on our university campuses and in our schools. It's the same for the Chinese government, perhaps even worse.
Around 60 people at the rally, most were waving flags and wearing traditional Tibetan clothes despite the icy wind. The group kept spreading out, following the sun across the plaza as the afternoon wore on, trying to warm up, and that made the group look a little bigger each time they moved. Tetong called it a good turnout, and she continued to emphasize her message that even a small handful of Tibetans could make a change. But even she admitted to understanding the frustration felt by others within the community. Since 2011, 151 Tibetans have self-immolated, a desperate act in protest of China's restrictive military presence in the province. American Democracy Research Group, Freedom House, currently ranks only Syria lower than Tibet in terms of freedom and human rights. One of the few non-Tibetans at the rally said he was there because young Canadians simply no longer know the story of Tibet, as he knows it.
I am a resident of Vancouver here, and I've traveled all over Asia, and I've actually managed to go to Tibet. That's a long story. I snuck in there with some other people. I won't say too much about that, but I was able to see firsthand the devastation of the temples and monasteries there. There were mortar attacked, rocket attacked by the People's Liberation Army of China. I saw firsthand just terrible destruction. And they let the Tibetans sort of slowly rebuild bits and pieces, but it's nothing like what it used to be from old photographs and so on. So yeah, it was difficult to see.
So what's made you come down here today? What do you think this can achieve?
It's just awareness. A lot of the younger generation, they're not aware of even the whole story behind it, or where even Tibet might be on a map. I mean, it's all been sort of glommed into the China picture. So, hopefully create some awareness and get the word out.
As the rally protesters marched away towards the Chinese consulate, I managed to grab a few minutes alone with Tetong while she waited for her parents to join the march. I wanted to ask her, in light of Chinese cultural dominance, a new generation in Canada that has possibly never even heard of Tibet, did she feel there was any way her movement could make it onto the radar of young people today, especially the many young Chinese people who come to BC to study?
Many of the overseas Chinese students are, they will have been told one version of history and events, and so often that is not, you know, there's a lot of propaganda that they are fed from the time they're young on Tibet. And so I think the challenge, I say, for all young Chinese who are now living here in what is a free and open society is to look for independent sources of information on Tibet and see what these sources are saying. And beyond that, I think what's really important is that I think many young Chinese, whether they will admit it openly or not, know that the Chinese government, especially once you get here, you know that what the Chinese government is doing on so many levels inside China in terms of human rights and political freedom, civil liberties, they know that it's not right. They know that the government is, you know, in some ways brutalizing its own people. And I think what I would challenge people is if they feel like that is true for Chinese, then think about what must be true for Tibetans.
And so the Tibetan uprising moves into its sixth decade. But with so many causes clamoring for students' attention on campuses today, it remains to be seen whether a new generation of activists can make their voices heard. Thanks for listening to The Voice podcast this week. I'm Jennifer Wilson.